Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So I have been putting out the call today. I need help. Longtime listeners are aware of this. I need help with one particular thing that I'm asking for. What do you use for a news source? And I'm not talking about the written word. I've got plenty of places to go for that. But I want something less work, less time consuming, the sort of thing I can do driving or doing the dishes or whatever, something to listen to. I was very disturbed at the amount of Tiger Woods coverage yesterday. I'm disturbed about it today. I'm looking at the TV. It's the only thing on the news. I think it's amazing. The day before we hit 500,000 deaths from the pandemic, this is a milestone in our nation's history and world history. A national address from the president. Moment of silence. One day later, 45 minutes out of an hour news show is about Tiger Woods crashing his car. How can those two things happen 24 hours apart?
That footage they're showing right now, his last interview with Jim Nance, I've seen it 20 times. 20 times. When do you think you'll come back, Tiger? Oh, I don't know, Jim. I don't know. Just got to heal up.
So I was throwing out where do you get your news? Do you have a news source? My favorite news show is Brett Baer on Fox, and he did over a half an hour of the coverage with Tiger Woods yesterday, even with everything going on in the world. Here's some of the answers. OAN. I got to admit, I've never watched OAN. I should watch before I have any opinion of it.
It's being pilloried by the liberal media.
Right. So was Fox before I ever gave it a try 20 years ago. And it ended up being my main news source. So a lot of people like BBC. I need to get into that. I generally have... You watch BBC and you think, man, there's a lot of things going on in the world that I never hear about. Mm-hmm. That's it. It's always, since I was a kid, it's always been my reaction whenever I catch the BBC.
I don't know what their business model is, but I see a lot less of the picking aside on the BBC than I do on other things, too.
Yeah, they're biased in their own way, just in the way that all human beings are biased, and they're definitely left-leaning, but they throw a lot of information your way. It's like when you give up sugar, you have to get used to food that's not nearly as sweet. The BBC is that. They don't pour sugar on it.
So they got into an argument about this very topic.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hey, let me throw that in. I wasn't sure if your list was over, but... long-time contributor to the show and long-time friend of mine, Mike the Lawyer in Chicago, says WGN, that was America's first superstation. WGN launched News Nation. Its policy is unbiased news. He says it's my main source now, and it covers a lot of things. And if Mike the lawyer says that, that's a pretty good recommendation.
I've heard a number of people, nobody's said it today, but I've heard people say before the Financial Times, and I started I started a subscription to that, and it's a pretty good news source, but it's really expensive.
Yes,
it's just too expensive for me to get my news that way.
It's in the name.
I tried The Economist,
it's right there
too.
In the name, yeah. Economist.
Oof.
Need a little, put a little something on there to get her to wash down.
You know my previous metaphor? It's way less sweet than that. I mean, it's like,
But so Greg Gutfield of Fox and Geraldo Rivera got into an argument about this yesterday on how much Tiger Woods coverage there was.
And you want the well-being for everybody, but this man was special. He really was special in a way that history will regard him. So I think that our homage to him by paying such close attention to this disaster is entirely fitting, Dana.
He's not dead, Geraldo. We are talking like he passed away. He escaped death. So did the people in his vicinity. He lost control of his car before he hit anything. He should consider himself very lucky to be alive, and he should consider himself very lucky that he didn't hurt anybody else, even if it wasn't his fault. Nobody else got hurt. We have a challenge of doing this show, wall-to-wall stuff, having to avoid unspeakable truths and instead do this kind of repetitive salutation and grand pronouncements. Let's at least inject a little bit of sobriety and honesty into this thing. My father-in-law died in his car on Christmas Eve. He wasn't a world-famous golfer, but you know what? He was a great man, and I'm glad I said it.
I'm sure Tiger Woods is happy to be alive and grateful that nobody else was hurt.
Dana Perino thinking, are you two going to fight? Did I get hit by accident? I'm not exactly sure I followed Greg Gutfield's point there.
Well, quit with the worshipful wall-to-wall coverage. The guy was going too fast and he lost control of his car. He could have killed somebody. He broke his leg up, but he's going to be all right.
I think if he had died yesterday, it doesn't need to be a half hour of my hour newscast. I think that's crazy.
No. A loving retrospective later on.
Wow. I don't know if I'm that far out of touch with what people want. Do people want that?
I think the special report people have a pretty well-honed sense of what people want.
Why would you assume that, though, based on our experience of being in the broadcast business and people knowing what people want?
Yeah, mass media is for the masses, though. The more mass you get, the more lower common denominator you get.
I don't know.
You're just pissed off because you're a bad golfer and you quit the game. It's just the jealousy. It's the green monster. It's ugly. You hate to see it.
There's no celebrity. Princess Diana, Tiger Woods, Kobe Bryant, anybody that should dominate a serious newscast when they die or get in a car wreck. It's crazy. We're not a serious country.
If the sitting president croaks it, then I say yes. The ramifications of that, the implications, etc. 100%.
See, so anyway,
golfers who really haven't done much lately.
Oh, so if he had won the Masters last weekend, then it should dominate the news for an hour. See, I'm not sure.
Jack, it's a tradition unlike any other.
Azalea line fairways. Hello, friends.
But Geraldo was pretty worked up.
The patrons lined up along the azalea line fairways.
Geraldo was pretty worked up there. History will note how great this man was. The history of golf will. I'm not sure.
Yeah, he was a super great golfer on virtually any other measure. I mean, why am I indicting Tiger Woods? I don't want to lionize him. I don't want to indict him. I don't want to talk about his golf swing. Moving along.
Yeah, it's interesting. So my main point being, where do you go for your news? Where do you get your news? And I want to hear that all day long. Just, I'm kind of curious. 916. No, that's not. I was about to give my own phone number. That'd be weird.
You really want this answer?
I want this answer so bad. Here's my own cell phone. Call me at home any time of day.
FaceTime.
FaceTime me anytime, day or night.
Oh, boy.
Oh, geez. You know, I should do that sometime. It'd be kind of fun. I'd want to get a burner phone, not my, yes. like my number I've had forever and all my friends have. But just yeah. like, here's my personal number. You got anything to say? Thoughts? Anything?
I promise, today and today only, I will answer it every time it rings.
Text call anytime. Right. Here's my number.
Hey, it's Tiger.
Hey, Tiger. It'd be fun to see what you get. Oh, I saw Rachel Yucatel was really concerned about Tiger's car crash. That's the cocktail waitress that he was betting in Las Vegas that turned porn star.
Hostess, yeah.
Oh, she was the one that was calling his phone, and his wife was going to find out.
Hey, do me a favor. Take my name off your phone.
That doesn't do anything.
That was her. Yep. Jack, in other news, the U.S. Army has developed a terrifying new weapon. Word is leaked. It is a laser, but it's very different than old sorts of lasers, and this could be a game changer.
I want to hear about it, and we probably should get to at some point, revenge bedtime procrastination and how it's robbing you of precious sleep time.
Yeah, I really want to hear what that is.
They had a hearing about the Capitol riot yesterday. What did we learn, if anything? All on the way.
Armstrong and Getty. The Armstrong and Getty Show.
Don't say a word. The climate envoy, John Kerry, said that there are only 9 years left to save the world from the effects of climate change. Does President Biden share that assessment? 9 years.
I don't have a new timeline to give you from here. I can confirm for you, though, that the president agrees with former Secretary Kerry that it's a crisis, that time is of the essence. We need to act quickly.
So people decried the loss of the press conference during Trump. That they stopped having those and he would just speak on his own. Why? Right. They never answer questions anyway.
The daily press briefing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just an exercise in, how good is this person at spinning?
Yeah. How often do they actually answer the question? Does he agree with John Kerry that the world's coming to an end in 9 years? The president also agrees it is a significant problem. Next question. Nobody benefited from that.
No.
The class system we have in America, Tucker Carlson talks about that a lot on he's the top rated cable news show in America. I got to admit, I often have no idea what Tucker Carlson's talking about. He gets about halfway through a segment and I think, where is this going? I don't understand your point. But he had one at the end of his show yesterday about colleges and class I thought was really interesting, and we'll get to that in a little bit.
Yeah, I'd like to hear that. Looking forward to that. Plus that weird revenge-y sleep thing.
Yeah, I got that right after you're done with this.
Excellent. The United States Army is developing its most powerful laser yet that is a million times more powerful than the current lasers.
What?
I'm doing the math on that right now. Hold on.
How does anything leap that far that fast?
Oh, that's a lot more powerful.
That's a lot more powerful, we've determined.
Sean, your physics degree is really, really paying off there.
I recently learned if you turn your calculator on your smartphone, if you turn it sideways... You get a scientific calculator.
Yeah,
it's helped
cool?
a lot. Yeah, yeah.
Sines and cosines and whatnot.
Your tangents.
Most laser weapons fire a continuous beam until a target melts or catches fire. That's what we're familiar with. But the tactical ultra-short pulsed laser, or the UPSL, sorry, for Army platforms will emit short pulse-like bursts. It's designed to deliver a terawatt. That's 1,000 kilowatts, I believe, for a 200 femtosecond burst.
All right, you just burst. These could be real words or made up. It wouldn't make any difference.
A femtosecond, Jack, is 1/4 trillionth of a second.
Don't be condescending. Of course I know that. What?
In 1/4 trillionth of a second, this burst delivers a terawatt of power. Even in that infinitesimal amount of time, incomprehensibly short, the UPSL could vaporize the surface of a drone. It's also thought that such a burst would disrupt nearby electronics, making it a functional EMP or electromagnetic.
Well, what would it do to a person?
Interestingly enough, they say it really isn't, it could cause mild skin irritation to blindness, but isn't really practical as a deterrent. But laser systems are incredibly effective to incinerate enemy drones, mortar rounds, missiles, that sort of thing. According to New Scientist, out with the old scientist, in with the new scientist. Laser systems are better directed at small, fast-moving targets like drones or missiles. Although they can do terrible damage to a battleship, that sort of thing as well. The prototype would pack an extra punch over vanishingly short lengths of time. Unlike normal lasers, which spread out over overly long distances, a USPL can turn the air itself into a lens and keep its intensity intact.
Wow.
I wonder if there'll ever be a battle where any of these new modern weapons will be used. I hope not.
You know, I was just thinking that very thing, and for every capability that's developed by a military, its enemies must develop a counter capability, and a lot of our capabilities now are in technology and communication. And so the counter capabilities are all about disrupting that, like the EMPs we were talking about. So I could easily see warfare in the 21st century be as low tech as we've seen in half a century, because we won't be able to use any of our technology. So you'll have generals hastily scratching out notes on pads, and a runner will literally run it over there.
And because both sides will have dismantled the super cool tanks or planes or whatever by hacking into their computer systems, you'll have people on horses charging the other side with swords, because none of the weapons work because everything's been hacked.
I wonder.
Wouldn't that be crazy?
Oh, yeah, indeed. One of the most interesting things I've heard about the military recently is they've been working hard to develop, it's hard to describe, rotating communication systems. They have communication systems A through L. And if the opponent blocks A, we move to B. Then we swiftly move to C. And all the services have to be coordinated. The Air Force has to know that the Marines are now on G. We've gone from internet to telephone to microwave to, I don't know, telepathy to whatever. Because of the, you know, the technical countermeasures everybody's trying to develop.
What is revenge bedtime procrastination? It's really just a fancy new term for something that has existed for a very long time, but it might be worth talking about again regardless. It's really the idea of you get through a long day of nose to the grindstone. You've been working. You've been taking care of your kids. You've been doing laundry. You've been doing all that kind of stuff. You get to the end of the day. You're tired. It's time to go to bed. You should go to bed if you want to have a full night's sleep so that you're not tired the next day. You get your full 8 hours, so you're not running in a deficit the next day. But you don't. I don't. Practically nobody does. You sit there and you scroll on your phone and do crap that is more or less meaningless, that you barely remember the next day. You regret doing it the next day. That's one of the keys to this thing, is people do this all the time, and you get up the next morning and you regret it. You don't think, you know what, that was a good idea. Nobody gets up the next morning thinking, yeah, it was a good idea that I kind of scrolled through my phone. I don't even remember what the hell I was looking at for another hour and a half before I went to sleep. And then you do
it again. Well spent.
And then you do it again the next night, which sounds a lot like my history with addictions I know about, alcoholism or whatnot, the next day thinking, that was not good, I don't want to do that again, and then you do that again the next night. But that's what people do with this revenge bedtime procrastination. And you keep getting further and further behind on sleep, and it's self-perpetuating in that the more tired you are, the more you feel like you deserve something that's not just work and taking care of kids at the end of the day. And so you do more of it again and get even more tired.
And I find it interesting that it's being described as revenge as opposed to just self-indulgence.
I don't know who had to come up with
the vengeance against?
I don't know. I don't know who had to come up with the fancy term.
World?
But their point is you got to break the cycle of just getting more and more tired. And if you get enough sleep, you won't have the need for the revenge bedtime procrastination near as much to just scroll through your phone mindlessly. You'll be more comfortable with the idea of just going to bed. That's what
they like. Self-perpetuating misery.
Yeah, how about that? That's something the modern person has to break out of.
Yeah.
I've, you know, how many people have done that, including me, where you the next day you look at your phone. Oh, yeah, I was looking at whatever online, you know, shopping for something I'm never going to buy. I've never even thought about before. I don't even remember why I was doing it. But you stayed up an extra 20 minutes reading about it.
Why would I need nunchucks?
Don't do that.
Armstrong and Getty.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rocked the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James. LeBron James.
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver. And this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courteney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
The Armstrong and Getty Show.
Before COVID, the median family income in the United States was about $65,000 a year. At Yale, it's 3 times that. The median family income of a Yale University student is $192,000 a year. That's the median. At the University of Pennsylvania, it's about $196,000 a year. At Brown University in Providence, it's $204,000. These are all Ivy League schools with multi-billion dollar endowments, endowments heavily subsidized by you through your tax dollars. So they could afford to educate poor kids, they just choose not to. At Princeton, 72% of students come from families in the top 20% nationally for household income. Nobody seems to have any plans to change any of this.
We're going to play more of that from Tucker Carlson last night. I find this to be just a really interesting conversation. And I don't want to get, I worry about, like, you know, not understanding it enough and getting too far down the road of just, you know, raw populism. But we do get lectured all the time by the elite universities about the importance of diversity. Yeah, as you heard there, they're the richest among us at all these colleges. Unless you think all the rich people have the smartest kids, and that wouldn't make any sense from any biological standpoint whatsoever. There's something going on there where the wealthy are sending their kids to the most elite universities, then lecturing the rest of us about the importance of diversity in our neighborhoods and lives and schools. There's not diversity in their neighborhoods or workplaces or schools, but there has to be in ours or we're bad people.
Right.
Which
yes.
is really interesting.
That is terribly annoying. I would say as a guy who's shepherded three kids now through college that it's not the smartest kids. It's the kids with the greatest academic achievement. And the more wealth you have, the more tools you have to get that going. It can't make up for a kid who just can't, you know, rub two brain cells together, but it does help. So it is self-perpetuating in that way.
Yeah, and so it contributes to the class system that we have developed in the United States. And this is what Tucker's talking about a little more of that.
So here's our advice to the members of the woke professional class at the Times and elsewhere who are about to discover that their own rules might actually apply to themselves. Here's our advice. Stop complaining. When you discover that your own children's life plans have been thwarted due to some new imperative of social justice, don't say a word. Don't whine or moan or file a lawsuit. Don't even acknowledge it's happening. Just accept it. It's not like you can pretend you didn't know the meritocracy was fake. You single-handedly destroyed it yourselves. For years, you thought you had an exemption to the rules that you made. You imagined that challenging power applied only to other people's families. Sorry, the revolution has finally come for you. You pictured your kids graduating from the local friend school and moving on to Cornell to immerse themselves in gender studies and international relations. Oh, but not anymore. It's a new era. Again, an era that you designed. Now your kids will be taking the bus to a poultry processing facility in rural Iowa to begin their new lives serving the critical culinary needs of the people they replace, the ones now going to Cornell. And maybe someday, if they're lucky, your kids can learn to code. But no matter what happens to them over the next several generations, don't fret. And once again, above all, don't complain. Complaining is racist. Diversity is our strength. We're a nation of immigrants. That's the main idea of America, which, as you have often told us, is simply an idea, not a nation. Now, all of this might be hard for you to see right now. It's painful, and we get it. Because it's happening to you, it might even seem unjust. Trust us, it's not unjust. It's the definition of justice.
That, I find that really interesting. Books could be written about that. College classes could be taught about that. This effort among the elite who go to these universities that are so white and so rich, wanting the rest of the country to get to emphasize diversity and talking about diversity as our strength and all these different mm-hmm. things. If the diversity that they're talking about for the rest of us actually comes to them, as Tucker points out, you know, you might not like the results.
Oh, no, they would have a heart attack.
Yeah. Right. You, as he says, you might be working at the chicken beheading plant in the middle of Iowa. And the kid that grew up in that local town might be going to the university that you were supposed to go to.
Yeah.
And things could get real upside down real fast. And we've been talking about this for years. It drives me crazy. The people in power that talk all the time about immigration, for instance, and how good it is for the country. Nothing's changing in their neighborhoods. Their neighborhoods are exactly the same. If anybody's speaking Spanish, it's because they got the gate code from you and came in and trimmed your hedges, but they're going back out again.
Right.
Your schools are still all white and English speaking, or certainly upper class in English speaking, from an income standpoint. And the rest of us are supposed to like all the diversity that's happening. And if we don't like it, we're clearly bad people.
Yeah, although the sort of diversity that comes to the elite universities, for instance, is a bunch of incredibly rich people who may have different skin tones, but all think the same and are from the same neighborhoods and the same yacht clubs.
It is still very white, though. I remember talking about the numbers on this after the scandal broke of people faking their kids into various sports and that sort of stuff. Mm. Lawrence Summers, the guy who used to run Harvard, talking about how he looked out his window one day and he thought, I only see white kids out there. What is going on? And he started looking into it. And then they made real reforms to try to get, you know, Harvard to look at least more like America, you know, just on the statistics, because it's whiter than America. It was whiter than America was at Harvard. And he thought, why is it that way when we talk about and he tried to put in all these different, you know, programs and everything like that. And nothing has changed over the years. So the system is still rigged toward people with enough money getting in all these universities, which might be fine as long as you're not trying to force all this supposed diversity on the rest of us against our will.
Right, right. And it's not the, you got to be careful when you talk about this, because it's not the idea that we have any problem with diversity per se. It's the means used to enforce it or to force it upon people, whether it's quota systems or the horrific woke anti-racist education that's not about diversity. It's about power. Yeah, the whole university system is just so bad.
Are any of those people who want what they call diversity, are their kids going to a school where the teacher has to stop school and type into their phone what they just said so their phone will spit out in a different language, and the whole class has to stop for one kid who doesn't speak English, and the teacher is now going to slow down all the learning to try to help this kid who doesn't speak English? Are their kids going to a school like that? Who came up with these ideas? Probably not.
No, no. I would like to see a mass movement of the Brahmins of Wall Street, the elite of Harvard, Yale, and Brown, sending their kids to inner city schools where there are fistfights in the classroom constantly, where the rules say the teacher can't kick you out for open insubordination. You want some diversity? Supply diversity. Send your little rich kid to those schools.
Those stats. I like the idea of having a Harvard, a Yale, or whatever, where the smartest kids in the country get in. I love the idea of that. That's we all benefit from that. Having the people that have the most talent in whatever area it is, being able to utilize that to its fullest is great for all of us. But I don't think that's happening if you've got those statistics that Tucker just gave us on income. That's not what's occurring.
Right. Right. Yeah, I get that. Oh, it just popped in my head. Didn't we have a tape yesterday that we didn't get to? Speaking of Harvard, I don't want to explain too much of it because I don't want to ruin the fun of it. But
do you remember what the it one is, Sean? No, I don't either. You might have to tell us during the break.
No, that's okay. It was a series of people mentioning.
Oh, right. Yeah. Right, right, yeah, right. I didn't hear that either. Sean will dig that up. I'm still asking people, where do you go for news? I was disappointed about how much Tiger Woods coverage there was yesterday, and I thought, where can you go to get news? What do you watch or listen to for news? What you read is interesting, too, although I think I'm pretty good for that. But what do you watch or listen to that's not going to be all celebrity car crash news, if that happens? A text line is 415-295-KFTC.
Hey, it's Tiger.
Thank you, Tiger.
Armstrong and Getty.
And now, people who went to Harvard.
Well, I don't hold myself out as some kind of genius, but I went to Harvard.
Look, I went to Harvard.
I went to Harvard in the mid-90s.
I went to Harvard.
I went to Harvard undergraduate.
And I should, I guess, declare something. I'm a Harvard graduate.
I went to Harvard Business School and got a degree.
That's right.
Yeah.
I went to Harvard Business School and worked at Goldman Sachs.
I went to Harvard Business School and worked at Goldman Sachs.
No, I went to Harvard.
Like I said, I went to Harvard.
I went to Harvard.
But I got to tell you, I went to Harvard and I went to Harvard. I'm trained in economics. I went to Harvard.
Who didn't support our troops, Carrie?
Well, for example, at Harvard, I went to Harvard.
I feel like what's interesting about me is I went to Harvard Law School.
You know, Erica, you know, I went to Harvard Law School.
I did go to Harvard Law School.
I went to Harvard Law School.
I went to Harvard Law School.
Because I went to Harvard Law School and I believe in numbers and facts. And
that number is from Harvard University. Tens of thousands of Americans a year.
I went to Harvard University.
Wow, that's a minute of people saying I went to Harvard.
There's an old joke. I can't remember precisely how it goes, but how do you know if someone went to Harvard? They'll tell you.
Right. And as we learned from those stats a little bit ago, even more so with like Princeton and some of the other universities, Yale, it more likely means your parents are rich than it means you're extra smart. That's the only solid indication I have. You might be smart also. But the only solid indication I have is it means your parents are rich.
Well, and the idea that we should lionize the people who go to a certain university and fall down at their knees and worship them just is sickening to me.
It's weird.
Yeah, it is. Anyway. Coming up on the show, the great wrestling match between California and Florida. It's kind of like the wrestling match between Andre the Giant and a five-year-old girl in terms of economic outcomes right now. We'll touch on that. Plus, what used to be a mainstay on the Armstrong and Getty show, that's a really, really old person explaining how they grew to be so old, what their secret was for staying healthy. And this one I actually like because it mentions gin.
You're 116. What do you think the secret was to becoming 116?
Every morning I would have one teaspoon of lemon juice and I'd gnaw on a walnut just till it was soft. Then I'd spit it out.
It's always something quirky and nutty. And if the oldster was going to be honest, they would say one thing.
Genetics.
And
it's just genetics and I didn't die in a car wreck.
Genetics and Tiger Woods didn't hit me.
Right, exactly.
That's why I'm so old.
So stay tuned for the latest in an ongoing series of that. Just a quick nod to Beltway politics, which we don't obsess over like most cable news shows, because they're based in the Beltway, and they're part of that giant high school that is Washington, D.C., and they're all at the same cocktail parties, and their kids all go to the same $50,000 a year schools. But it is worth paying attention to, as the president appoints his cabinet. Mostly the Republicans have been playing nice and approving the president's picks for the cabinet, which is proper, and unless somebody's, you know, awful, he gets to pick his own henchmen. But there are a couple of trouble spots. This Neera Tanden woman, who is just a terrible human being, savage, brutal, Clinton loyalist, who's being nominated for Office of Management and Budget. And then Javier Becerra, the longtime Attorney General of California, who is the most hardcore, I don't know, is this left? He is the most enthusiastic proponent of abortion on earth. He believes in abortion up until the kid's practically in kindergarten. He is perfectly comfortable with infanticide, very late term abortions, very, very late. He's fine with partial birth abortion. In fact, I think we have a clip on that.
Which is interesting because very few people are, even Democrats, okay with late-term abortion.
Right.
Very few people are. The numbers are, I think, single digits for final trimester.
Yeah. Yeah. This guy's way out on the extreme. Go ahead and play clip 53, Sean, if you would.
You voted against a ban on partial birth abortion. Why?
We may not always agree on where to go, but I think we can find some common ground on these issues because everyone wants to make sure that if you have an opportunity, you're going to live a healthy life.
I think we can reach common ground on many issues, but on partial birth abortion, it sounds like we're not going to reach common ground there.
Mitt Romney there.
Yeah, that was an odd conversation. I'm not sure if it was the editing or what. It seemed like two different conversations, but anyway.
That was his answer. That was his, I'm not going to answer that question.
Wow.
I'm going to say something different.
That wasn't even a good one of those. Anyway, Javier Becerra is also the guy who has persisted in suing the Little Sisters of the Poor over and over again because they don't want to give people who work for them, and it's mostly volunteers anyway, but they don't want to give them birth control. They consider that against the teachings of the Bible. You know, they're hardcore Catholics. But he has persisted, even after the Supreme Court ruled in their favor, he's found a new angle. It's inexplicable, because the state of California, which he represents, is in no way harmed by the national exemption granted to the Little Sisters of the Poor. So it's just an abortion extremist just going after anybody who he doesn't like. And I like this this piece in National Review. They point out, These women, the Little Sisters of the Poor, spent all their time and energy trying to get health care to the old and poverty stricken, trying to bring comfort to the lowest and most miserable among us. I like this sentence. Remember, these aren't corporate polluters. They aren't insider traders. They aren't tech giants. They're an order of nuns founded by a saint who begged in the streets of 18th century France so she could carry out her charitable work. And the other thing Javier Becerra has enthusiastically pursued is suing these religious-based crisis pregnancy centers, suing to force them to hand women flyers on, here's where you get an abortion for free. Here's where you get a free taxpayer abortion. And these organizations are saying, whoa, whoa, you can't force us to do that. We're plainly what we are. We offer alternatives to abortion. And luckily, the Supreme Court, at least, has ruled in favor of these organizations saying, no, you can't compel speech. You can't force somebody to say something any more than you can censor their ability to say it in this setting. But Becerra won't leave it alone, and he won't leave these organizations alone.
Now, he also is not a doctor and has no history of working in this area, yet he's up to be the cabinet secretary for Health and Human Services. I believe he'd be the first person that either wasn't a doctor or didn't come from that background.
Yeah.
He's being portrayed as, or I heard it portrayed as, the reason Republicans are challenging his nomination is because he was so outspokenly anti-Trump.
No, that's
ridiculous.
Not that
it's any of this abortion stuff, or maybe he's not qualified, or he's hardcore single-payer insurance and that sort of thing.
Right, right. Yeah, he is an extremist, and he's just a bad human. So I hope they kick him out, and then Biden will pick somebody perfectly reasonable for Health and Human Services, somebody capable, somebody experienced, somebody smart. And I say let him pick his henchmen, unless it's somebody is scum sucking as Javier Becerra.
Well, they only need 50 votes plus Kamala Harris, right, to get him through.
Yeah, but the moderate Democrats don't like him either.
Okay.
I mean, as we pointed out, he is so way out there on late term abortions and partial birth abortions and unspeakable stuff I wouldn't even describe on the radio to you. I'm rooting against him, that's for sure.
Our ongoing full coverage of Tiger Woods' car crash, we will never stop talking about it because it's the only thing happening in the world.
I've been watching the news over Sean's shoulder the entire morning, and this is the first time Tiger Woods hasn't been on the screen.
Right. Took about an hour.
Did China attack or something to bump Tiger Woods?
The best part yesterday was the never-ending coverage when nothing was known. You have no information, but you're still going to go nonstop.
Tiger Woods is dead. Nope, he's alive. They used the jaws of life. No, they didn't. Another car was involved. No, turns out that wasn't involved. Yeah, please.
So I heard jaws of life many times. Then I heard at one point in the afternoon, no jaws of life. And I thought, well, there's yet another good lesson in the whole don't believe any early reports.
Yeah, and that was from the sheriff's department, too, so they didn't know what was going on.
But look at all the clicks there my Jaws of Life story got, though. That's going to look good on my quarterly review.
Oh, man, we don't have time for how this woman got to be not only 105, but she survived the coronavirus at that age.
Oh, wow.
Her secrets for long life and health. You want to hear this.
Yeah. I put a hard-boiled egg in my mouth and walk around the block every evening before bedtime.
Exactly.
Really? Is that the key?
Armstrong and Getty.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast. This week, I talked to Orlando Bloom in a rare interview where we went deep into how to get comfortable with fear and how to change the guilt and shame thought pattern.
People say, what are you afraid of, right? I'm afraid of fear because it's like I want to confront anything in my life that feels challenging on those levels.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.